Back to another episode of the Leading with Purpose podcast with me, Dr. Wajida Small. I say this every time I have a guest, but I am really excited about this episode because we have an amazing guest with us today, Dr. Jasmine Escalera. Y'all, I had the opportunity to be in a clubhouse session with Dr. Jasmine as a co-presenter. I follow her on Instagram and she does these amazing lives with guests who give the best, literally the best career advice ever. She is just, she's absolutely amazing and I can't wait for you all to meet her. But before we get started, I want to tell you a little bit more. So as always, I'm going to take all my notes and read her bio to you. So Dr. Jasmine Escalera is a certified career and life coach with proven programs that help her clients focus on gaining clarity around their career, beating self-doubt, and building confidence. As a coach, Jasmine integrates empowerment, success-focused mindset work, and strategy into a program that ensures her clients have both the belief systems and plan to take change of their careers. Jasmine was voted one of the top job search experts to follow on LinkedIn in 2021. By JobScan and a career expert to follow in 2021 by Brains Magazine. Jasmine is also a TEDx speaker with the talk Conquering Workplace Conformity as a Woman of Color, detailing her journey as a Latina in STEM. Jasmine was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, and received her bachelor's degree in biochemistry from Pace University and a PhD in pharmacology from Yale. She has held high-level nonprofit management positions, designing research programs that increase the quality of life and healthcare options for underserved populations. Y'all, this woman is amazing. I cannot wait for you all to meet her. So let's get started.
Welcome to Leading with Purpose, a podcast for career and entrepreneur women of color on the rise into positions of leadership and influence in their organizations and industries. I'm Dr. Wajida Small, Purpose Alignment Coach and Leadership Strategist, and I am here to help you create a legacy through purposeful and impactful leadership.
So, like I said, I am super excited for our guest today, Dr. Jasmine. Thank you again for joining me on the Leading with Purpose podcast. Now, I have read your bio at the beginning as a part of the intro, but I generally feel like the bio doesn't do the person justice. So I ask all of my guests, as a means of introducing themselves, if they could share their story. So I would like for you to share your story with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I'm absolutely honored to be here and I'd love to share my story. My story actually starts with a little girl, a Latina, who grew up in the projects in Brooklyn and who fell in love with science at a very young age. I used to love solving problems and reading books, just anything to do with science and research. And as I was growing up, my community really championed me. I was that girl who was getting all the great grades in school. And I was kind of that girl in the neighborhood and in the community who everyone sort of gravitated towards and was cheerleading to, you know, really be able to make it. So when I left high school and started college, I started my degree in biochemistry, so in STEM. It was incredibly challenging being a Latina in STEM at that time. It still is. Being a person of color in the STEM field. And because I had left my community and the people who were championing me, I felt really alone and incredibly secluded. The most wonderful thing that happened to me when I was in college was that around my second year of college, I was actually able to re-engage with community of women of color in sciences. There were not many, but I was able to find my community again. And then as I went through, you know, my scientific career, that was one of the biggest challenges for me, was actually to be able to kind of connect with individuals who look like me, people who had my similar background. And so because of that, you know, being a Latina, being in a very white male dominated space like STEM, I had a lot of issues with conformity and a lot of issues with kind of trying to shed the person that I was to try to fit into an area and be successful. So my journey in my career especially was very up and down, trying to achieve success through sort of acting the way other people wanted me to, and really playing small in terms of myself and my background, and not necessarily achieving the level of success that I wanted to, or not feeling good about it because I didn't talk about who I was. I didn't feel as I was being the person that I wanted to be. And so after some time of really dealing with issues of authenticity, am I really being my authentic self? Really dealing with these feelings of code switching, of conformity, I just really started to let it all go and just realize that, you know, the community of Black and Brown individuals who I lived with, you know, those were my supporters. And I wanted to go back to that. I wanted to go back to that girl who grew up in the projects, who was so strong and so powerful and so courageous. And somehow the work environment completely had stripped that from me. So I decided to take myself on a real professional and self-development journey and just really re-engage with my background, with my culture, with my story, and with who I was as a means to really achieve the success that I wanted to achieve. And during that journey, I decided that I wanted to take my management and leadership experience, my love of, you know, just self-development, and start my own business where I could help women of color actually to do the same thing. So to really stop doing this thing that we all feel we have to do in order to achieve success, which is conform, to really step into their authentic self very courageously, to identify what they want in their careers, and to really develop the strategies and tools to achieve it.
Thank you. Thank you. So you use two words, and I'd like to ask you to talk a little more about them. So first, you said conformity. And so thinking about your experience as a woman of color in STEM, the first part of the question is, what did that look like for you? Or I guess, what was the expectation of you as it relates to conforming? And when you talk about kind of the women that you're helping now, what has that looked like for them? And how have you helped them kind of, I'll say, move past the need to conform? Because at least when I think about my own experience, we kind of internalize it and feel as if it's something that we need to do in order to be successful versus something that it's not a requirement, which then will shift me into my other question to you about the other term that you used, which is authenticity.
Yeah, those are such great questions. So in terms of what it looked like for me, being in the STEM field, it's incredibly competitive. I would say that the STEM environment is very, very competitive. It's very white male driven. So conformity for me looked like trying to be something that I wasn't in terms of those environments. I cannot be a white man. You know, I am a Latin woman. I'm a very strong and proud Latina. But it meant like kind of trying to mimic their behaviors and styles, and then also trying to adopt things like a competitive nature, which was very foreign to me. So as I mentioned, in my community, everybody supported everybody. Like we were, I mean, I remember having the best childhood ever because, you know, we all supported one another. We were all there for one another. I feel like in many ways I had many parents, you know, like that's just how we were. Yep. So that competitive style of environment didn't suit me, my background, or who I was at all. So it really meant adopting sort of the behaviors, trying to assimilate in a lot of ways, and trying to be extra or do extra to fit in. So trying to work really hard to prove myself. And that's something that a lot of my clients experience, is they go into these environments and they feel like they have to do more or be more, just to basically prove that they deserve to be there, mm-hmm. Or to show their experience because they think they shouldn't be there or they think they don't deserve to be there. So it's those feelings of I have to do more, I have to be more, I have to adopt a personality or behaviors that don't really go with who I am, mm-hmm. and don't really service me because they actually go against my upbringing and my culture. So that's what it looked like for me. And that's what it looks like a lot for my clients. In terms of helping them get past that and get through it, it's really about understanding your story. So I had to reclaim my identity in order for me to start to feel comfortable being in the environments that I was in. So I remember there was a very long time where I didn't want to tell people that I grew up in the projects because no one around me had grown up in the projects. They would never understand what that meant. And in fact, you know, when someone actually had found out that I grew up in the projects, they started to use it against me. So I got started to be called ghetto, and they started to see me in a completely different way. Like somehow now my behaviors meant like, oh, that's because she grew up in the projects. So things about me that I thought were like unique and beautiful and made me a strong individual were being utilized against me. So, you know, there was a long time that I did not talk about my past. I did not talk about my experiences. I wanted to, you know, look a certain way and wanted to wear certain clothes just so that I could try to fit in. And so really embracing my story again, reclaiming that identity and recognizing the power that it brought me was the first step to doing it. And it's one of the first things I like to do with my clients is reconnect them back to those experiences as a way to both reclaim their strength, but then also to understand some of the challenges. One of the most interesting conversations that I always have with my clients is this recognition and realization of, you know, you grew up a certain way. And because of that, that's one of the major reasons why you don't fit in the workplace, because mm-hmm. the workplace wasn't built for you. It wasn't built for you to succeed. That doesn't mean that you can't learn to play the game and you can't learn to make it. Mm-hmm. But recognizing that at first is really a powerful thing when you start to realize, like, I don't know that I'll ever fit in because it's not actually meant for me to do that. But you can still be successful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you. So I think all of us as women of color have had this experience. And, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking of all of the ways that I either changed myself, thought I needed to change myself in order to conform to a particular environment, and having these feelings of disappointment that, okay, I'm doing all the things that I'm told I should do. The code switching, you talked about growing up in the projects, even telling people that I was from the Bronx was like, let alone telling them that I grew up in the projects. I was just like, yeah, I'm from the Bronx. And it's just kind of like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like, and thinking about all of those things and then feeling disappointment where it's kind of like, okay, fine. I'm speaking your language, right? I'm behaving the way that you think I should behave, which is my general behavior anyway. How I conduct myself, how I speak. And then it's just kind of like, okay. And I think one thing that I did, and I don't even want to say I toned myself down, but I've always just been a very kind of fact-based speaker. Because at the end of the day, you can't dispute the truth. The truth is the truth. So you can't say that I'm being too emotional, which I've been, and I think all of us have been called too emotional or anything like that, if I speak the facts. But it's just kind of like, I'm speaking the truth to you. And then it's just kind of like, oh, you need to be nicer. So I started to make those changes, if you will, kind of tone it down. And then it was kind of like, all right, I've done all these things, but nothing has changed. Yeah. You're not treating me differently or anything like that. And I want to go to what you talked about being authentic. And I can't say that there was any one trigger for me, mm-hmm. but one day it was just kind of like, I am just, you know what? This is me. This is who I am. You're going to get it. If you don't like it, I guess I came to a realization that however you felt about me had nothing to do with me, because you don't know me personally. We're not friends. We've never engaged in any kind of relation. So for you to make a personal judgment on me as an individual, on my character, when I have not been out of character, is more of a projection of your insecurities on me versus me having an issue or being a problem. And it's just kind of like, you know what? Here's me. I just, you take it or leave it. And to my surprise, they took it. And it was just kind of like, maybe I should have just been myself the whole entire time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so beautiful. I love that. I really do. I love that story because it's very similar to mine. Yeah.
And so what I found was, and it may not be the experience for everyone else, but at least what I found in my experience was showing up as me. And I can understand, you know, we all have to be strategic and adjust to environments and just, you know, all of those things. But I found that folks respected me far, far more than they had. And I think part of that is because when I made the decision to fully accept myself, to allow my full self to be expressed in every environment, I reclaimed, and I'll say reclaimed, the power that one, I thought I didn't have, and two, that I thought was stripped away. Mm-hmm. So if you can, and I know that was my long way of getting to my point now, but if you could share more about one, kind of like, what was the moment for you where you said, I know who I am. I love who I am. I'm going to be who I am in every space that I am. And some of the challenges that some of your clients have faced, and the advice that you have given them, or how you've helped them work through getting to that point where authenticity is just kind of like the one thing that we don't or shouldn't compromise.
Yeah. You know, I loved hearing your story so deeply because it resonated so much with me, because and it leads to your question as well. It's interesting how you said, like, I was doing all the things, but nothing was changing. And that's how I felt too. You know, when I was trying to act a certain way, when I was trying to be a certain person, when I was trying to engage in the way that I thought other people wanted me to, it didn't make it any easier. Like, I actually felt like somehow it made it harder, and it made it harder for me because I can remember waking up in the morning and having severe anxiety over having to go to work because I felt like I was a totally different person there. You know, I felt like outside of work, I was this fun, vivacious, energetic, outgoing, confident person. Mm-hmm. And then I would go to work and I was like, I would doubt myself so much that I wouldn't even speak up, that I wouldn't say anything. I would sit in meetings in the corner hoping that nobody would even see me.
That was me.
Yeah, it was the complete and utter opposite of who I was as a woman, you know, as a Latina. Like, it didn't make sense. And I love how you said there wasn't one trigger. It was the same for me. I think it was a compounding of feelings and it was kind of like almost inner conflict. Like there was something within me that was like yelling at me, telling me like, this isn't you. So I don't think it was anything. Although there were lots of external things happening to me and lots of triggers that were happening externally, I think the moment was something that happened and sparked within myself, this almost coming to knowledge of you can't continue to do this to you. And that's when I went on this amazing self-improvement journey that really was a lot about me, again, just starting to love myself again and starting to love my story again and starting to love this journey again, and also realizing that that is what made me the person that I am and got me to where I was. And that's the biggest strategy that I use with my clients, is like, stop trying to make it work and just start trying to make it work for you. And, you know, that's the biggest thing. And that ultimately is the biggest challenge, because as women of color, as people of color, we are taught to hustle. Like, you see your parents hustle, you see your family hustle. So you equate doing things with movement and with the acquisition of either money or things, right? Like, that's what you think. You need to do something. And for me, the doing was actually just like not trying so damn much, but instead like working on myself and loving myself and reconnecting to myself and to my story. So the biggest challenge is to get people to really understand that there's not a strategy. You can't Google like, what are the steps to like, whatever, like it's really about the reconnecting back to you. And, you know, loving yourself enough to say, like, I'm going to show up as me 100%. And whether they, like you said, whether they like it or not, oh, well, like, but this is me.
Yep. And so when you were talking, you mentioned all of the anxiety you had at kind of going to any one of your places of work. And as you're talking, I remember at a previous employer, it got to the point where I wasn't even referring to it as a work. I would get up and I would say, I do not want to go to that place today. And every time I spoke to someone, it was that place. I didn't give the name of the organization. I didn't call it work. I didn't call it my job. It was that place. And when I think about that particular organization, and you use this term a lot, and I want you to talk about this, but it was, and I know people kind of tend to throw the term toxic as just kind of like a catch-all, but when I think about that particular experience, it was an extremely toxic environment. And when I think about that term, not only was it impacting my mental health, but my physical health as well. I literally felt like I was deteriorating as an individual in this environment. And what I noticed in that particular place was that's kind of where it came to, I'm just going to be who I am. If you don't like it, too bad, so sad. And that goes to what you talked about, doing the right thing for you versus doing what you think someone else says that you are supposed to be doing. And the right thing for me was leaving. And there was this, like, this... I want to call it a change, but I don't think the term change captures everything that leaving that place kind of, I would say, did for my soul.
Yeah.
But if you can, in your experience, in the work that you do as a coach, and, you know, how you help women really kind of leave toxic places, because it can be difficult. You know, when we think about like such a drastic change and the change in our livelihoods. And, you know, I remember at a previous organization, I was having some issues. And I remember talking to my mom and she said, well, you know, do you want to deal with the devil that you know or the devil that you don't? Because this is something that you're going to experience everywhere. And there was some truth to that in terms of the experiences. And I'm not sure how we don't experience them. But what I did realize is that when I got to the point of doing what was right for me, my experience was different.
Yeah.
In that other organization. So again, long way for me to come back to my question to you. If you could kind of talk about how do we leave, right? What's the term that I'm looking for? In the absence of the term, like, how do we leave being okay? Because it can be really hard.
Yeah. So you brought up a lot of things for me to think about, and I loved the question. And this is such a powerful question. And I want to start with what I define toxic workplace as, because there's a lot of signs of toxic workplaces. For me, a toxic workplace is one in which I cannot be my whole self within that environment. And due to that, I am doing things like conforming. I am feeling doubtful. I am feeling imposter syndrome because I am trying to be someone else and not trying to be myself. And that right there creates all of that conflict, that internal conflict, that anxiety. All of those things really stem from like, I can't be me in this environment. In this space. And that is the one thing that when my clients are ready to make that leap and make a change and get out of the space, that I try to get them to really hone in on is, who is the person, right? Who are you? Like, who are you and how do you want to show up at work? Like, who would be that strong, confident, powerful woman that you define her as? And how does she want to show up at work? And what does she need to be successful at doing that? So what are the types of environments she needs? Who's the type of people she needs to work with? What are the things that the company has to provide for her in order to thrive, not survive, not just make it? And so when my clients are ready to make that transition, that's the core focus of it, is what is it that you feel you need to be your best and whole and most authentic self in the workplace, and then to create sort of the backbone of your job search being to focus on those things. So typically the women that I work with, they enjoy the work that they do. It really is the environmental component that is triggering them to, you know, have certain experiences that are in many regards incredibly traumatic. So it's about, you know, healing that as well, but then also thinking about what is it that you need to be your most confident, authentic, and whole self in the workplace, and creating the job search that focuses on you being able to obtain those things. Now, you mentioned something that so many of my clients say, which is, you know, I don't want to leave the devil that I know for something that could inevitably be worse. But if you focus on finding the things that you know you need to be successful, and like you said, once you changed your mindset, things just ultimately just did get better. So if you focus on that shift and change of mindset, and you focus on the fact that I am going to very strategically go into this looking for what I know I need, then it will be better. I always tell my clients, I wish I could wave a magic wand and tell you that tomorrow, every single job environment everywhere will accept you. But we will have challenges and we will face those challenges. But when you work for an organization who cares about your growth, who listens, and who actually creates the spaces for you to talk about your experiences, and who not only creates the spaces, but actively wants to help in the change, it will be different. It will ultimately be different. So I really, when you say leaving, it's never my decision for my clients to leave. It's there's so many things that go into that decision. When they're ready to, it's about a very strong, purposeful focus on who they want to be in this space, and then focusing on finding the right environments that match that.
Thank you. There was a lot there. And so if you could touch a little on imposter syndrome, I think we have an idea of what that is, but I don't think a lot of us recognizes when it shows up and the mm-hmm. impact that it has on us and how we actually show up in the spaces. If you could talk about that, because I'm just, as you're talking, I'm thinking, you talk about too the environment. And I think a lot of us don't recognize that our environment plays a huge role in the way in which we think about ourselves and what we're capable of doing and achieving in any specific organization.
Yeah, I love this conversation about imposter syndrome and the environment, because that has a huge impact on how you see yourself, right? The environment you're plucked into is going to have a huge impact on how you see yourself. And imposter syndrome is really that. Imposter syndrome is high achieving individuals basically thinking that they're frauds, thinking that they don't deserve to be there, they don't belong. And the impact of that is massive, and it's different. So you can have individuals who feel like they have to work harder to really be able to prove that they actually do belong there. So you have people who do the overachieving, the overworking, the putting in more. And the way that that really impacts you is you're not being selective with the work that you should be doing, the work that's actually going to progress you and move you forward. You're just doing work. Like, you just mm-hmm. want to prove so badly that you deserve to be there, that you're just in it and you're just doing it. So imposter syndrome and that feeling of a fraud just triggers so many different things. Self-doubt, it triggers procrastination, perfectionism. There's so many different ways that it can trigger you. And that's the thing about imposter syndrome, is I believe it's both internal and external. Mm-hmm. So you have externally this environment that is probably very different than the environment that you grew up in. Like for me, I was in a very white dominated space, white male dominated space, very different from mine. So I didn't feel like I deserved to be there anyway, because it was almost just kind of like, these people have completely different backgrounds. They went to completely different schools. I went to, you know, New York City Department of Education. Like, here are these people like who went to, you know, private schools and had different styles of education than I did. So there are definitely the external components here. There's also things like microaggression, bias, straight up racism that you probably experience in the workplace that can also trigger things like imposter syndrome. I also do feel that imposter syndrome is that internal component as well, because the things that happen are things like negative beliefs about yourself, self-doubt. And those are all of the things that you have to then start to work on and overcome. So there are these external triggers for sure. And that's one of the biggest things I advocate people do when they have feelings of imposter syndrome, is get very, very clear on what the triggers actually are for you, because that will tell you how you can work to actually overcome the imposter syndrome. Or in many cases, what happens with my clients is that when we explore the triggers, we start to realize this environment is not the right environment for you. And you have to start working on that plan to leave, because you're not going to be able to change the triggers. Mm-hmm. What you need to do is change the space. And again, get into a space that allows you to be your best self. We will always experience things like imposter syndrome, because imposter syndrome actually can also acknowledge that you are expanding yourself. So when you have imposter syndrome, sometimes it's even good to say, am I having imposter syndrome because of a negative thing, meaning there's some negative things happening to me, or I'm in a negative space? Or is this really a sign that I'm stretching myself, that I'm learning something different, you know, that I'm trying out something very new, that I'm stepping outside of the comfortable and into the uncomfortable in a good way? So imposter syndrome, it's such an interesting thing, because I think we are coining it as being something very negative, but there is that component of it that you will experience imposter syndrome even when you yourself are stretching your limits. But that could be a great thing for you.
Wow. Thank you. I personally have always seen it as the negative. And as you're explaining it, I start to think about when I transitioned into a new role at my current organization. And I, you know, while I will say I had exposure to certain elements, I kind of moved directly into it. And once I was kind of like in that space, it was just kind of like, are you sure you're supposed to be here? And a lot of it, I mean, the triggers too, in terms of, you know, it was predominantly white. I am, while I was and still am the highest ranking Black woman in the organization, the only Black woman on the executive team. And in shifting into my new role, there was definitely a lot of growth, and it was amazing. But it was just kind of like, are you sure you're supposed to be in this role? Like, are you even actually qualified? But then it was just kind of like, girl, you've been doing this for 20 some odd years. You're clearly, I literally got a PhD in the field in which I am working. So from an educational perspective, I kind of know most of the things I'm supposed to know in order to be successful. I've been doing it for so long and have so much experience. Clearly, someone else thought that I was capable, because otherwise they wouldn't have said, hey, do you want this opportunity? But I think it was me not looking at it from the perspective of an opportunity as a position, as a place for me to grow and expand. And the imposter syndrome that came with that versus, you know, and then I would go back and forth, like, why do you feel like you don't belong here? And trying to figure out kind of if there was an external trigger. And in some cases there were, but then in a lot of other cases, it was, it's growth. And I think the other thing was an added level of exposure, which increased a level of vulnerability. And it was just kind of like, hold up. Like, lots more people see me now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, are they going to, you know, see the fraud? But it's just kind of like, in actuality, the only person that was seeing me as a fraud was myself. So it's really great that you explained it that way, because I think, at least for me, it will add an extra layer of self-reflection to really go a lot deeper than I think some of the surface reflection that I had been doing, and not really looking at the internal, but just focusing on the external environment.
Yeah. And it's so interesting, because when I was listening to you tell your story, I heard positive things being the triggers. Like, you had more visibility, more exposure. There was a growth opportunity, and it was the way you saw that positive thing that was starting to trigger the imposter syndrome, which is why I say both that imposter syndrome can be triggered during those positive states. So it can signal that you're doing something good, but also why I say that it's internal too. So it, yes, there are the external triggers, but there are the internal ones as well, because you were internally like the triggers were coming up in terms of how you felt about yourself. So that's the same experience that so many of my clients have. In fact, imposter syndrome, I feel like creeps up its ugly head the most when you are stretching yourself, like a new job, right? How many times have we all thought like, oh my God, now I have to like do the thing. It's like, but you were hired because you know how to do the thing.
Yeah. So
it can very much be triggered during those times where you are doing something really good for yourself.
Absolutely. Thank you. So the final thing that I would like to touch on, and you talked about this being one of the things that you work with your clients, is really having or really focusing, I think you said a purposeful focus. And from purpose has become, I'll say, the guide for me, really knowing what it is that I am called to do. Finding, and when I talk about purpose, you know, sometimes when you think about that, like I give the example, like, I don't think I was called to be the head of human resources. Most folks don't, that's not really a calling, if you will, right? I see that as my head work, something that I enjoy doing, but I find purpose in, you know, this, having platforms to share the stories of women of color, giving them advice, lessons learned, helping us grow from every perspective. And I find ways in which I can do that in every space that I'm in. And when I looked at needing to leave a previous organization to move into the organization in which I am now, purpose played a really important role, because the organization that I work for now, there's so much more personal alignment in terms of the values that the organization puts forth and my own personal values and my ability to work in my purpose, whether small or large, where I didn't have that opportunity in other places. And so when I thought about moving, it was, at least for me, where is the place or what is the role or kind of what kind of job can I do, if you will allow me to focus on my purpose? And having had the opportunity to do that, despite some, I'll say, early challenges, which really had a lot to do with some of the people versus the overall organizational environment, this is actually one of the best roles I have ever had in my entire career, because I'm able to focus on purpose, and wherein it may not necessarily be a part of every single aspect of every single day, I'm in a space where I'm able to find bits and pieces of it enough for me to be fulfilled in my work and in my role.
Yeah. I love hearing that. And I love how you talked about purpose. I heard you talk about values when you were talking about purpose. And for me, that was a core component of me finding my purpose, was really understanding, what do I value most in my life? Not even just in my career, right? Like when you think about your career is just a vehicle for your life. Like it gives you the money that you need to live your life. It gives you, you know, it gives you something that you can do that makes you feel good, right? Whatever that thing is that you love to do. And that's why you should cultivate that. But it is a vehicle for your life. And when you talked about values, I had to think about my values outside of my career in order for me to connect to my purpose within my career. So what I valued was very similar to you. I value community. I value uplifting women. I value helping women feel more empowered. Mm-hmm. I value inspiring. I value motivating. So those were the things that I then had to figure out how to translate into my career to feel more inspired by my own job, my own 9-to-5. And that didn't happen right away, right? Like that was a journey. And so when we talk about purpose and finding purpose-filled careers, I also want to acknowledge and let everyone know that it's okay if you don't have it in this moment. Finding purpose is a journey in itself. And so there are tools and things that you can do, like understanding your values. What to the core is very important to you as a person? What brings you joy? What brings you happiness? What brings you fulfillment? Not just even in the workspace, but just in life in general. Like what matters to you? So those things can take time for us to really connect to because they require us to take time to connect to ourselves. And so if we do not give ourselves the space to do that, then we won't really be able to find that purpose. So it is a journey. You have to go on that journey. And, you know, I talk a lot about, and I'd love to hear how you feel about this. I talk a lot about mindfulness. I talk a lot about being with oneself, sitting with oneself. And just this week alone with my clients, I've been talking a lot about stop moving, just sit still, like stop thinking that the answer is going to come from doing more things. If it hasn't worked out for you that way yet, try this thing of just taking care of you and just letting the answers come to you instead of forcing them. And so I do talk a lot about mindfulness and I do talk a lot about that within the setting with my clients. However, mindfulness and this concept of being with oneself was not, that's a privilege. That was not something that my parents could afford to do, like literally could afford to do. Mm-hmm. They did not know that these things existed. It was a stigma in my community to, you know, even think about things like mental health. So we were not afforded this opportunity to just sit and just be with oneself and figure it out. I have afforded myself and have given myself the privilege to do that. But as people of color, we do not grow up thinking that that is something we can do. Yep. And so this concept and idea of mindfulness and, you know, being with oneself and self-reflection to me is it can seem like a very white thing that we just are not granted the opportunity to provide ourselves. And I try to work with my clients to give themselves the permission to do it. And that is so incredibly important to me because that's how I found my purpose. I found my purpose by being with myself, by asking myself tough questions, by reflecting on the moments that I felt the most joy, the most love, the most loved. And that's how I found it. But, you know, it can be really difficult to think that you can do that.
Thank you. And I actually want to leave us there. I want to leave us with giving ourselves permission and self-reflecting and knowing that we've worked hard enough to be able to just stop, not move, just stop and listen. And hear ourselves and understand what it is that we need. More what we need rather than what it is that we want. And understand that purpose is not something that's rushed. And that it's okay if we don't know what that is right now. But when we take the time that we need to sit and reflect and just stop doing, it's going to come to us. And what I found is that it came to me right when I needed it to come to me. It was just kind of like, aha. Mm-hmm. It was an aha for me. So I want to leave us there. But so first I want to say thank you. because this has been an absolutely amazing conversation. But before we go, I want to make sure that we know how to stay connected with you. How do we stay connected? How do we keep up with what you're doing? How do we get involved with Dr. Jasmine?
Yeah, thank you so much for asking. So I am on Instagram and LinkedIn, I feel like, all the time. maybe I should give myself some self-care from social media. But I am on Instagram at Jasmine Escalera Coaching and LinkedIn at Jasmine Escalera. And I also have a wonderful group coaching program for women of color that'll be enrolling in a few weeks again. And we focus there on these kinds of conversations and on really help these women, these amazing women, to make their next career move with confidence and, you know, find that purpose that they're looking for.
Perfect. Thank you so much again, Dr. Jasmine. And thank you all for listening to another episode of the Leading with Purpose podcast. And I will catch you next time. Bye.
Thank you so much for spending some time with me today. It has been great sharing this space with you. I hope that you have taken what you've needed so you can share what you've learned and that you are on your way to living, learning, and leading with purpose. I encourage you to stay connected with me. Please remember to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. You can also follow us on Instagram at Leading with Purpose Podcast. And don't forget to visit my website, www.yjitasmall.com, where you can subscribe to my mailing list. Till next time.